GM, and welcome to Rec Radio. I wasn't sure. So KBM's having issues. KBM's basement is flooded or something, and apparently his microphone is not working, or speaker.
It wouldn't be Rec Radio unless KBM wasn't having issues with the audio.
Basement is flooded.
Yeah.
Is KBM
radio I'm not at my normal space. Yeah, I'm coming right now. I'm not at my normal place, so yeah, I don't know. I didn't get it. I don't know. The speakers aren't working. The headphones aren't working. Things are just going poorly right now. So
here we have to turn him up. I can barely hear him. Go turn up your piece of audio.
You can't hear me?
It's very quiet.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right, you guys just keep talking for a second while I try to figure this out.
How's it going, Michael?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Shitcoin season's taken over. We've gone from Wizard of Soho, which was quite a fun episode, I thought, although it got cut off just before we all got arrested by the SEC, to now Udi, which is, not quite the king of Bitcoin, but a prince of Bitcoin. It's going to be a good episode. Do you want to start with the sponsor while KBM can I be the lord sorts of shit Bitcoin? Out? What was that, Udi? Sorry?
Can I be the lord of Bitcoin?
The Lord of Bitcoin. I like that.
we'll intro you as the Lord of Bitcoin.
But first off, let's intro the sponsor. As you know, this show is sponsored by Rollbit, one of the largest crypto casinos out there. You can do anything from futures trading, NFT lending, sports betting, casino games, loot boxes, everything degen in the space can be done on Rollbit. So make sure you check out rollbit.com or rollbot.com, depending on your jurisdiction. And I'll give you guys the first code. The first code is taproot5522. And just a reminder, this show is also streamed live on YouTube. So check out the link in the pinned tweet. We're going to do something different for the giveaway loot box spins at the end today, because the Twitter comment picker thing basically rugged, so you can't pick the comments anymore. You can only pick retweets. But if you guys see the pinned tweet that we have here on the Rec Radio, which says "Watch Rec Radio live on YouTube," make sure you guys like and retweet that, and then we'll pick one of the retweets from that at the end of the show. So make sure you like and retweet the pinned tweet to have your entry to the loot box spin at the end. And with that, I think I fixed the audio situation, KBM. So if you want to have a go at it.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. Can you hear me?
We're good.
No, I can hear you. I don't think it was your issue. I think it was Obi, actually. But
yeah, I was saying, because I literally did nothing different.
Yeah, he didn't have his audio.
It was not fixed.
So he was just
I just wasn't going to speak if that wasn't fixed at this point with how my day's going.
I realize that every single time we do the show, it's going to be at the same time of FOMC, right? Are they normally on a Wednesday?
Yeah, an hour before. I mean, that's why we got to kind of hard cut it off at 1:55, but PM Eastern. But yeah, I mean, Wednesday's our FOMC, right?
What do you think?
I mean, they're not that big of a deal. I don't know. I mean, I haven't even had a chance to look at anything, man. It's been a brutal couple days. So.
The guy's literally drowning in his own house. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, he's looking at there you go. Right now. Exactly.
So what happened
to Twitter Pickers Fuck? Twitter Pickers Fuck too. So we're losing all sorts of technology on our end, huh?
Yeah, tough time to be in the video casting business, I would say.
Yeah, wow.
We're looking pretty good, I think, OSF. We've really stepped up our game.
It's just you guys, you two, yeah.
The frame rate on your camera doesn't
look right. So anyway.
Yeah.
So we have Udi here today. Best known for his antics with Bitcoin. And I mean, I don't know, me and him had a little bit of back and forth with the ordinals, even though I wouldn't say I was well-versed on ordinals at all. Probably still I'm not. Probably just stirring the pot. But we're going to hear more about that, I'm sure, today. But maybe we just start with, I don't know, Udi, how'd you get started in crypto? Where'd this all begin? And get a little intro for the people listening out there so they get an idea of who you are if they're not familiar.
Yeah, so sadly, I got into the mentally ill world of Bitcoin and crypto, about 10 years ago, probably. It's all been downhill since then. And yeah, you know, it's like, it's like, you know, you lose all of your friends, your family stops talking to you, like the usual story. But I actually used to be like a software developer. So that's kind of my background. And I got into Bitcoin because I thought it was technically interesting. And with time, kind of learned to appreciate the other aspects of it. But these days, it's all about ordinals, man. I can't wait to talk about ordinals and how KBM is warm about ordinals. That's like really why I'm here.
No, I love it. I mean, getting into crypto 10 years ago is a pretty good thing. It seems like you would make more family and friends because the number went up a lot. I don't know. What, you lost all your family and friends. Well, you spent too much time on it.
You know what it is. Like, because what happens is, look, in 2013, Bitcoin was very much unknown. And if anyone ever heard that term, it was through, like, you know, stuff like Silk Road and things. So people just assume, you start talking about Bitcoin, people assume you're a criminal, but like either insane or criminal. And then they over time just stop talking to you. and then like 5 years later, it's like, oh shit, he was accidentally right. And then it's a problem too, because they're like, oh, they've been trading you for 5 years. And now, like, what do they do? So it's an issue, but I blame myself.
It sounds like you found your true calling with Bitcoin early on. But what was the first thing that got you into it? Like, what was the first moment where you're like, hey, I'm going to go out there and like buy some Bitcoin?
Yeah, I think back then. So, you know, first of all, buying some wasn't my first instinct at all. Like it just seemed like cool tech, I guess. It was interesting to me at the time that it could kind of run without a centralized entity running it. I know that these days it sounds, to people in crypto, it sounds like very boring, but back then, back then it was pretty exciting. And also, like, you know, I had some minor experience with online poker actually at the time. And that was, you know, I think maybe a year or two after, you know, some of the big poker sites kind of collapsed, and it turned out some of them were Ponzi schemes. And also it was kind of difficult to, you know, transfer funds to these websites. So from my point of view, it was like, to me, it was very, very obvious that when you go to some website, whether it's a poker site or your bank or what have you, and you see a number, it doesn't really mean that it's yours in any material way. Like, one, they might not let you transfer it where you want to, and two, maybe they actually don't even have it. So to me, like, just because of that experience, it was kind of obvious that digital dollars are not always real and they're not always yours. And so when Bitcoin like popped up, I was like, wait, actually this is like way better. So it was kind of immediately obvious to me why it makes sense, I guess. So that's why I was really excited about it. So nice. I had to lose my money in poker first. In order to see the value proposition.
It's incredible, like, the amount of people. I mean, we've interviewed a lot of poker players in the show as well, but it's incredible the how similar people's backgrounds are who like enter the space, whether it's like through trading or poker playing or professional gambling or whatever it is. It's just like everyone seems to share like this same trait of wanting to take risk, which I guess is like one of the reasons why we wanted to do the show, wanted to get like an insight into people's heads from that standpoint. But I'm not surprised to hear you say that. So what were you? So you mentioned you were a software developer before all this. Like, what was the kind of stuff that you were you working on? Was it like blockchain related or just like other general tech stuff? Can you hear us, Udi? Hey, yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay, I can hear you now. I can hear you now. Yeah. So you said I used to be a software developer, and then what?
Yeah, like, you know, what was like, what were you specializing in? Was it already like blockchain related stuff, or brand new, or general tech, or what was the what were you working on before?
Yeah. So I mean, you know, back then probably nobody or very few people had actual jobs in the blockchain space, right? I guess some did, but it was pretty rare. So, no, I – it was definitely general stuff. One thing kind of I think helped me later on was I did have a role at PayPal at some point, which kind of got me to learn a lot about how – you know, how digital payments work in the real world. Like in crypto, people tend to talk a lot about digital payments, but in reality, it's not happening much. Like there's not really a lot of people using Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies to really pay for things. I guess sometimes, but not. It's not like a super popular use case. And through my kind of job at PayPal, I learned a lot about how it actually works, you know.
So I guess my question going on all this, it sounds like you're early to Bitcoin, but then Bitcoin's not really been the forefront, I think, of being early to things, I guess, in crypto for the last 3 to 5 years. And now it seems like it's back again. Like you have ordinals, you have the BRC20 coins. Do you think Bitcoin is going to go through a revolution here of like innovation where it's going to be at the forefront again of innovation in just the crypto space? Or do you think this is, do you still think you're a bit more of a omni-chain sort of guy now?
So, are you guys hearing me okay or is it?
I think we're missing you from time to time.
A little choppy.
Yeah, it's a little choppy, yeah.
Yeah, let me see if I can do something about that. Just a second. Sorry about that.
No, you're all good.
Well, in the meantime, how's it going? Everyone's doing well.
Yeah, we're not the best.
I mean, every week
we
go through this. Wizard of Soho was like driving on his way to Canada with me. This week you're in, I don't know, I don't even want to know what's going on in your basement, but Udi's breaking up.
I'm at a different place. I thought I'd catch an early flight and fly in and have time to do a show at this my house in New York, but yeah, I don't know. It didn't work out because I also forgot half the shit.
Did you get involved in the shit coins recently?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're better. But no, yeah. I did not get involved in those. I haven't been able to do anything. I've just been in full chaos right now for the past week. But anyway, back to what did we ask Udi a second ago? Let's see if his text fixed. I don't know. What are we asking?
I think Michael asked, you were talking about how Bitcoin was the original thing. And then
I can ask it again.
Right. Yeah, I think you should ask it again.
Now we're all like good.
Udi's definitely with us. So I'm not going to ask.
Oh, he's just left. He's rage quit.
Oh man. Goodness. But no, to answer your question, I didn't get involved in any of the meme coin stuff. I don't know. You had it early, right? OSF, but you sold.
Yeah, I wasn't early enough and I didn't hold it long enough. Like I left 7 figures on the table. let's put it that way.
That's crazy. I mean, I guess people seem to have made a lot of money on that one. I'm adding him back to the speaker. Yeah, I don't know. There's been a lot of them. I'm not sure though. I haven't paid any attention. All right, Udi, are you back, dude? You don't have Wi-Fi where you are? Where are you?
Nice.
Well.
Okay. Let's do this.
Oh, he's in. He's back in the game.
Let's do this.
Yeah? We're good?
All right. Start spitting some game about ordinals and tell us what the fuck the big deal is with ordinals and why we should buy them. Because, I was hating on them. Why don't we just get to the meat of the show? Because I don't know who's going to get rugged next. But let's just get to the meat of the show.
Yeah, let's do that. So, you know, inscriptions, for the last, like 6-7 years, I don't think there was a lot of like speculative excitement around Bitcoin outside of the, you know, there's obviously been like the mainstream semi bubble of 2021, 2022. But as far as like the crypto ecosystem is concerned, I don't think the people in crypto have been super excited about any sort of around Bitcoin. There might be many reasons for that, but I think, you know, the thing that kind of happened is that culturally, I think the bunch of like both devs and both like just kind of some of the Bitcoin OGs, I think, have been pretty aggressive about blocking any type of innovation on Bitcoin. And what seems to have happened is that they fucked up. They made a mistake in the so-called Taproot upgrade in 2021, at the end of 2021, which accidentally, unintentionally allowed much bigger transactions to occur in Bitcoin. So bigger byte size. Basically, we can stuff more data in them. It wasn't really planned. It wasn't really something to do. I mean, they knew it was kind of a side effect. So, this guy, Casey Wordermore, and he designs this protocol for the inscriptions. Basically, it's a way to say, hey, instead of like doing NFTs the way that Ethereum people have done it, we're going to take the actual images, the actual JPEGs, and store them on chain. Which allows for some interesting stuff. It kind of turns them like into a very Bitcoin like thing, because they become truly immutable. So unlike, you know, with Ethereum, some of the NFTs can be changed. We've actually recently with collection. I don't know if it's really all the rage. And recently they had like they were pissed off about something about the royalties. So they kind of reissued their collection. But they changed the image on the original collection. Like basically anyone who owned the goblins had like a new image on it. Which some random tag. So anyways, with Ethereum NFTs, you can kind of change, the creator kind of still controls them. With the ordinals and inscriptions, because they're on-chain, the holder is the only one who's really in control. So that's one thing that's pretty cool. The second thing is that they're truly scarce in the sense that, you know, Ethereum NFTs, you could issue 1 million NFTs a day, right? If you wanted to. But on Bitcoin, like, a limited amount of block space. There's only 4 megabytes every 10 minutes that you can use in order to create those inscriptions. So there's this actually scarce competition over the block space that is used in order to create those NFTs or those inscriptions. So the dynamics are different. Because the dynamics are different, like, the market ends up being different. And it has a lot of, like, interesting dynamics that let people be creative.
Can I butt in for 1 second? Because I have a question. I mean, like, I honestly haven't done like a ton of work on ordinals. But you're saying, so only a certain amount are created each day. So what? How is it chosen who gets to create the ordinal and get the inscription? Is it, like, fee-based? Or, like, how, you know, does that gatekeep a lot of people from making NFTs at the same time? Like, what's going on with that side of it?
Yeah, so if you want to make an inscription, block space, you have to pay for it, and there's only a limited amount of block space. So, yeah, it is essentially a competition between people who are willing to pay fees to the miners in order to acquire some block space and use it for whatever inscription they want to create. So that does mean that they tend to get expensive. If transaction fees on Bitcoin right now, they're higher than they've ever been recently. History. Yeah, block space in order to inscribe stuff on it. So there's definitely Only there's definitely the most. Not everyone can because it's becoming expensive.
We're losing you in and out again. You got Wi-Fi somewhere?
But
go to your local Starbucks, Udi.
I mean, that eventually high quality. I'll just tell some jokes. I'll be back in 2 minutes.
Jesus Christ.
He sounds like he's been walking on a motorway.
He's gotten out of his car, walking on the motorway, trying to find like the nearest service station where he can walk into a McDonald's and get some McDonald's free Wi-Fi.
Oh God.
Honestly, him and Wizards of Soho just like decided that yeah, we're just gonna troll these guys 2 weeks in a row. we're just gonna go to our local motorway, just drive around while we do the show.
Oh, we
have to ask people before they come on the show from now on. Are you near any sort of motorway in the general sense?
Now we're like gonna make sure they have like 250 megs and something download upload. I don't fucking know. We're gonna need to put a filter in. But
I love that.
So I guess let's go back to like FOMC.
Did you get involved in any ordinals then? I don't understand. Like half the guests we get on here, KBM, you seem to have had some sort of beef with.
Really?
It's like, who else? Yeah, we had a fight. So now we're getting him on the show.
Oh no. I think I just like talk shit on ordinals once without. I mean, like, I honestly don't even like know what they are. But I was just like, they're definitely a flash in the pan, like blah blah blah. I don't know, you know. We're just being bearish on them, and then Udi, I mean, tried to give me some retorts as to why they're not. And I don't know. I thought we were gonna hear more today, but sounds like he's still using that old technology that Bitcoin's stuck in. He hasn't
have you
advanced
put an ordinal
yet.
Have
I haven't. Ordinal have you guys? Yet?
No, we got really close to buying.
OSF was about to pay like 100.
Yeah, I was about to overpay for an ordinal punk. Which I'm glad.
You could have been like Ryan Carson, where he
I would have been. Fun. I literally would have been Ryan Carson, yeah.
Yeah, but I think we were going to buy one rather than 20 or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh no, but we were going to buy the.
Your connection was terrible before. I don't know what happened, but you had really bad, really bad audio. Thankfully, it's better now. I don't know what you did.
Now it's perfect. Now okay, it's worthy of talking about ordinals. So yeah, why should we buy ordinals? Why should we sell all of our NFTs? Let's just get to the crux of the matter. Like, are we gonna lose this battle now? Is ordinals gonna take over?
I mean, take over what? The Ethereum NFTs are truly dead at this point. So.
The amount of pain felt by the audience there is just. Oh.
He might not be wrong.
I mean, truly, you know, it was funny. Like, I think it was what 2-3 months ago, KBM, when you tweeted something like, "No one's gonna know what the word ordinals means in 2 weeks."
And, yeah, no, I mean, I'm still feeling that way on my end of Twitter, but. I don't know.
Damn.
Maybe on your end of Twitter it's different, but you said like prices have been going up and whatnot. I mean, it's obviously a super like, you know, small community that gets involved in these sort of things, especially since it's not an easy user experience from what I can tell so far. I mean, is it becoming easier or like what's the deal with that?
Yeah, I would agree that it's fairly early in the sense that the user experience is pretty shitty still. It has improved a lot in the last like 2-3 months. So, you know, 2-3 months ago, people were using the command line. It's much better now because you have actual wallets and they're not too bad. I wouldn't say they're amazing, but they're, you know, they're close to what you expect. So it's gotten a lot better. And, yeah, you know, the most interesting, I think, signal is that the Bitcoin block space is just completely bombarded by those inscriptions at this point. So over half of the Bitcoin transactions in the last like week or so have been inscription transactions. So not actual Bitcoin transfers. And yeah, the fees are skyrocketing. So obviously, like there's a bunch of demand for block space that we haven't seen before. And if people care about kind of the long-term longevity of Bitcoin, That's something that's maybe a little bit more technical, but you know, over time, as we know, the reward for Bitcoin halves every 4 years. So the miners get a smaller and smaller amount of Bitcoin as time goes by. And the plan is, like, eventually, you know, you're going to want them to keep mining for Bitcoin to work. So eventually the kind of plan is that hopefully transaction fees will replace the kind of decreasing rewards that they're getting right now. And, you know, before ordinals and inscriptions, we haven't seen any of that. Like, transaction fees have been very low. The usage of the Bitcoin chain has been pretty low throughout the entire like last cycle. So it is much better now in that sense. And for people, you know, like me, who've been really...
So can we break that down slightly?
Yeah.
Sorry to interject. Like, I've seen a few threads about this, like about the future of Bitcoin security, and that at its current rate, it's not looking great. That things like ordinals and even these BRC20 tokens could try and help that. Can you maybe try and break that down for an audience who maybe isn't as familiar with how Bitcoin works from a security standpoint?
Yeah. So, you know, at the end of the day, in order for Bitcoin to function, you need miners. The miners select transactions and they put them into blocks. And the idea is, Bitcoin is decentralized because anyone can be a miner. Anyone could start, you know, a mining business and get the hardware and do it and participate in the network that way. But you need it to be profitable in order to get more and more people to do it. Like, we don't want people to do it voluntarily. They need to be able to profit. So in order for them to profit, they get a reward every, you know, that's kind of basic crypto stuff. It's going to be true for most networks, either if it's proof of work or proof of stake. The miners get a reward that is based on just the inflation of Bitcoin, right? So these days, I think it's 6.25 Bitcoin every 10 minutes in every block. And that number is going to keep halving. Like, every 4 years, that number halves until eventually the reward is going to be zero. And that is why we say that Bitcoin has a cap of 21 million coins, because it will never, like, at some point the reward will be so low that there's just not going to be new coins minted. So you still need the miners to make money somehow, because Bitcoin does not exist if there's no miners. So you need them to be profitable somehow. And the kind of general hypothesis is that over time, hopefully transaction fees kind of ramp up because Bitcoin's usefulness increases. And miners make money that way. But in practice, that didn't really happen. Like, if you look at Bitcoin's history, it's very rare that transaction fees get to a place where they could make sense for miners as the sole incentive. And what we've seen in the last, you know, 2-3 months is that finally, because people are seeing the value of the Bitcoin block space for other things that are not Bitcoin transfers, like they're not taking BTC and transferring it to someone else, but they're seeing the value in the block space because it, you know, it sticks around forever. And you know that as long as Bitcoin exists, the block space will exist. So people see value in storing that, and they see value in paying a lot of money in order to store something in the Bitcoin chain. So because of all that, transaction fees have been going up pretty massively. Like, it's actually right now, it's almost 100x what it was 3 months ago. And you know, on Ethereum, you've been seeing this sometimes, especially like in bull cycles, but on Bitcoin, not really. So some people are kind of upset by this because they're saying, well, it's expensive to transact, so now I can't transact because it's expensive. So they're upset. But if you look at the kind of general health of the network, eventually you want the fees to be high, because otherwise the Bitcoin network cannot really exist. So it is a good sign. I don't know if it's going to continue for the long term, but the fact that this might be a use case that people will be willing to pay for is a good sign for people who care about the longevity of Bitcoin.
Can I ask a quick question? Yeah, go on, Michael. You go first.
I was just going to say, does that mean the future of Bitcoin has to feel like a bit more like the future of ETH? If we consider a lot of like the dApps being built on ETH and these sort of use cases, is that kind of how you see now the future of Bitcoin, or are people just going to voluntarily pay these huge fees to try and keep the security of the network?
So I think that what happened, what we're seeing right now, I think the Bitcoin block space has always been valuable in a theoretical sense, but because it was kind of artificially restricted, you know, for example, there was a limit on the allowed transaction size in bytes. So there was a limit to how much data you can store whenever you make, you know, whenever you put something on chain. And that limit was artificial. So as long as that limit existed, it was kind of difficult to find useful ways to use that block space. But now that that limit isn't there anymore, then people are like, okay, yeah, of course there are ways to use if you have this database that is guaranteed to exist and be available forever. It's very limited in space, but it is guaranteed to be there forever. You don't have to think about it and you don't have to worry about who's controlling it. Then of course there's some value in it. It might not be the most valuable thing in the world, but there's some value in it. I would say it's definitely enough. You know, it definitely has a six Bitcoin it per 10 minute value globally, right? For all, like if you gather all of the creators in the world, all of the people who want to mint NFTs in the world, for example, I'm sure you can squeeze six Bitcoin per 10 minutes of value out of that use case alone. So now that I'm not saying it's necessarily the most important thing that the world has ever seen, but once we kind of unlock that the usability of that block space for other use cases, then yeah, I think it's very likely that people will use it in kind of creative ways over time. And that's just bullish for Bitcoin, because up until now it was a kind of a question mark of how are we going to afford the security budget and how are miners going to afford mining as you know, as things go into the future and their rewards become smaller. And the answer to this seems a little more clear now. But I don't know if that means that it becomes Ethereum, right? I don't think that's what it means.
The question I was going to ask, actually, going back to ordinals, is you mentioned the images and stuff, I guess, on-chain is almost as if they're actually inscribed onto, like, pieces of Bitcoin, or for lack of a better term. Does that mean, like, the file sizes for them have to be extremely low, or how does that side of things work?
Yeah. So because, you know, because you can only fit 4 megabytes into each block, and you only get a block once every 10 minutes, and because you have, it gets expensive because you have to share this with a lot of other people, then yeah, there's definitely pressure to kind of try to save space as much as you can, kind of try to compress and stuff. So, you know, we issued the Tapu Wizards collection almost, like, let's say about 2 months ago. And we, back then it was cheaper, right? So it's funny. We actually spent, I think, let's say we probably spent like between 1 to 2 BTC just to acquire the block space to put the collection on. And if you did it today, we did the math. If you try to do the same thing today with the same files, it would have been 32 BTC. That's pretty expensive. Wow. So almost $1 million. You know, so because there's so much competition now, so we were lucky in that sense. We did it earlier. But there's ours, you know, are not particularly large. Like, we use, like, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard of WebPs, but that's a format that can compress images further. So we used a bunch of tricks to make them kind of smaller than people would expect. So it's like, I don't know, they would be like, let's say 20 to 30 kilobytes each, or most of them, which isn't particularly large, but it's still, you know, it's still expensive now. So if you would tend to see a lot of like pixel art and stuff like that, that really, really saves on space.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Do you find that's like I guess some of the art that you see on Ethereum, and the way that it works is actually most of it is not on chain. It's all pointed, it's all uploaded to IPFS, and then there's metadata and URI that points to it and whatnot. But do you feel that not having the ability to do that is like a limitation for ordinals, and just that the things, the artwork themselves, just are forced to be like too simple or very simple? Or how do you think about that?
Yeah, so I mean, look, to be perfectly clear, it's not that you cannot do that. Like, if you wanted, you could always inscribe a URL to a web server and just say, hey, the image is there. You know, like you could definitely do that. You could do a, you know, you could do a protocol that would look for the image somewhere else. I think if you do that, like technically there's no reason not to, but I think if you do that, you kind of lose the novelty of what's special about ordinals and inscriptions. So that's why I think people are not really doing that. But you could. I have seen some projects experimenting with, you know, issuing like a very, very low res image and then kind of having the marketplaces displaying a full res image instead. Not necessarily something I'm a fan of it myself, but it's like, it's maybe, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's what's going to happen. But like, I think the novelty is the fact that it's on chain. And then, you know, you can think of it as a limitation. I see it as a constraint, right? And constraints, you know, in some cases, constraints can really breed a lot of creativity. We've definitely seen it on our end when we, it's kind of, once you have that constraint of the file size, and things actually tend to become clearer on the art direction too. So a lot of the kind of cool stuff that we're actually kind of proud of in the artwork for our collection came because of that necessity that we had to find a way to save space. So, you know, it can be good. It kind of depends on how you look at it. But also I think that, like, you got to ask yourself, like, what's the place of ordinals in the NFT market? Like, what are they going to replace all of them? And I really don't think they possibly could. I think that, like, I'm still kind of bullish on the idea that eventually there's going to be a very mass market NFT collection stuff, like something like, you know, what Instagram was talking about, but eventually backed out from. But I'm still kind of bullish that it might happen one day that you would just have, you know, masses of people like what Reddit has been doing with the Reddit avatars. Like, that's, you know, you just have a very large number of people that are kind of trading these at much, much lower values, you know, like $5 a pop or whatever. I could see that happen. And that's not going to happen on Bitcoin. There's simply no way, because there's no, like, it doesn't scale to that level at all. There's absolutely no way that this happens. So I think that Bitcoin itself could be kind of the outlet where you find the high-end luxury stuff eventually, just because the material that they're made of is very expensive. It's kind of like, you know, if you think about, well, you know, you can buy like a simple watch that just sells you the time, and it will be made of, you know, plastic or whatever, and it works, and that's what most people are going to do. Or you can buy like a Rolex that is intentionally made, yeah, like, out of, one, out of expensive materials, two, like, it's designed in a very complicated and intricate way, specifically in order for people to be able to flex that they own a Rolex. So I think that, similarly, I think that people who want the ultimate flex, the ultimate luxury, will probably buy them on the Bitcoin end, because the materials are that expensive, and making them is expensive and difficult. So, you know, that's kind of the way I think about it. It might be a bit of a little bit ways to go, but I think that's kind of the market segment that fits best for those.
Yeah, fair enough. That makes sense. Yeah, go ahead, Katie.
I almost feel like the file size constraints almost clash with that idea, though. And like, really, I don't know. I mean, it could be wrong in that sense.
I mean, you could. You're not that constrained, right? Because you could, if you wanted to, you could have a full 4 megabyte image. That's the one I'm wearing now, by the way. This one is we literally bought an entire block to make the one that I have. A full Bitcoin block is pretty expensive. So we bought, and that was like, that's like a pretty big statement, right? Like, you're saying, okay, I'm buying the entire block, I'm not letting anyone else in, and you have to outbid everyone else to do it. So you can, if you want to fit like a 4 megabyte image, that's a lot. That's big. You can do whatever you want with a 4 megabyte image. Mine is like intentionally very simple, but you could do like what you could do whatever you want. And we the and then you make that statement of, yeah, I bought this entire block and I didn't let anyone else be part of that block. And I think that's something that, you know, luxury buyers will be looking for. You know, so if you want, it's the only limit is that it's going to be expensive, but I think that there is a market for that kind of stuff.
So what's the best ordinal project to buy then? Taproot Wizards?
Well, with Taproot Wizards, I mean, good luck getting your hands on one, to be honest. I think we've released less than 20 of them. So there is 2,100 and 21 Taproot Wizards that are inscribed and they live on the blockchain, but we're sitting on them pretty tightly. And there's less than 20. I don't remember the exact number, but there's less than 20 out there that you can try to buy it from someone who has it, but like they don't want to sell it, man. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
I mean, it definitely sounds interesting. I think there's definitely a market there. I mean, my eyes, I don't think it's going to be overtaking Ethereum NFTs anytime
soon.
No,
absolutely not.
But I think it definitely. I think it definitely has its place, though. And I'm glad we were able to get some info, because I mean, like, I hadn't done enough work on it at all. I mean, am I going to buy one? I mean, I'm not buying Ethereum NFTs, so I don't think I'm buying any today. But I do think it's interesting, and it's super cool that they're like completely inscribed on chain. You're not relying on IPFS or something like that, and the creator can't just rug you somehow. So that part of it is pretty sick.
What exactly is a Taproot Wizard? Like, what does it mean to be one? And what do you see as like the future of Taproot Wizards?
Yeah, so, you know, we talked about how I kind of started out around 2013. And around the same time, Bitcoin had a branding problem. Like, I think it actually has one too. But back in 2013, it had a big branding problem because, as we said before, one, most people didn't know it existed at all. And two, people who did know that it existed thought that it was only for criminals, and maybe it was, but it had a branding problem, that's for sure. And there was the Bitcoin subreddit on Reddit back then. That was where most of the online Bitcoin discussions were happening, and they had, I don't know, they had like 20,000 members. I think now the Bitcoin subreddit must have like 5 to 10 million members, but back then it was around 20,000. And they looked for a way to kind of promote it. And so they held a competition, like a contest, where they said, you know, if you guys make a cool ad that we can post on Reddit, we'll pay you some Bitcoin and probably like multiple BTC at the time, because it wasn't worth a lot. And we'll use it we'll put it on the Reddit front page to drive some traffic. So this guy shows up. He's, I don't even know what his real name is, but his pseudonym is Mavensbot, and he makes this very simple image of a wizard. It looks kind of like mine, but even simpler, very goofy, and it basically just says "Magic Internet Money." Looks like a 5-year-old wrote it, and it has like a button that says "Join Us," and that's it. And that image won the contest. They ended up putting it on the front page of Reddit, and it ended up being, at the time, was the best performing ad ever on Reddit. And it very quickly like doubled and tripled the readership for the Bitcoin subreddit and whatever. So it was very successful. It got, you know, some good pop culture references too. These days, when I talk to people who kind of joined Bitcoin the same time period, a lot of them tell me that that was the way they heard of it or the reason they got interested in it. So it was very influential in Bitcoin history and Bitcoin culture history. And I feel like these days we're in a similar, I mean, obviously very different, but a similar place in sense of branding for Bitcoin. I think that you've got a lot of people these days, of course, that are involved in crypto. But I think many of them are just not seeing Bitcoin as an interesting thing to look at all. I think really because they didn't have a reason to look into it. And also the online community for Bitcoin has been, in my opinion, kind of terrible. I mean, we can talk about the Bitcoin laser eyes all day, but I think like it turned into this cult that it mostly thrives upon rejecting people from the cult, which is just not very healthy for the long term. Just math wise, it doesn't work. So, anyways, kind of what we're trying to say is, you know, we think that there's a way to attract those audiences back into Bitcoin if we give them a symbol that they can identify with, you know, and that works both with kind of Bitcoin OGs who just love the image of the wizard and they kind of think it's cool, but also with a lot of the kind of newer kids that have been trying out NFTs on Ethereum and just didn't have a reason to look into Bitcoin. So yeah, and we've been like the early signals from this have been really, really good. Like we were able to grow the community pretty fast. And people seem to be really excited about both about Tapper Wizards, but also about Bitcoin. So I think it's a very good signal. But of course, we'll need to see where we can take this. But I think that there's a lot of potential in giving, you know, builders and creators reasons to go look into Bitcoin again. I think that some of the Bitcoin community has been kind of like, oh, well, if people don't get why Bitcoin is special, we don't need them. And I think that's really a really terrible approach. But what we're trying to do is to say, hey, look, if there are good things waiting for you here. So if you're a creator, if you're a builder, like the Bitcoin community is open for you. It just depends on which parts of the Bitcoin community, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's been a little bit of a Bitcoin renaissance, and I mean, that's good for everyone. Even if you're in the ETH maxi, it's good when Bitcoin goes up and, you know, just more people come to the space. I guess we're going to find out in a couple minutes, actually, what's going to happen in the short term with some price action.
Oh, yeah.
We got this FOMC. So that's why I just want to kind of wrap it up, because I'm going to trade that, and that's in 9 minutes. But before we go, I mean, like today, episode a little different than the other ones. Usually we have like some gamblers and degens, and they have some different advice on how not to get wrecked. But we always ask every guest their best advice on how not get wrecked. So take it and take it away with that one, Udi. And everyone else, go retweet the pinned tweet on Wrecked Radio to be eligible for the loot box spin that we're going to do in a second. So stick around for that too as well, Udi, after you answer this question.
Yeah, how to not get wrecked. Man, you know, look, most of you here are young. You have time. Like, you don't have to necessarily, like, I'm talking to people. That's insane. Like, I'm talking to people and they're like, God damn it, how do I make 9 figures by the end of this year? It's like, what are you even talking about? This is not the expectations of crypto people are absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. Like, you get, I guess because you get into a bull market and you get to know like a couple of friends that kind of gamble their way, I guess, into becoming rich, and they're like, okay, so I should be able to do it too, even in the depths of the bear market or whatever. It's like, bro, take your time. Most of the people here seem to have time. I don't see anyone here who's particularly old. It's okay. Like, you don't need to feel stressed to make 9 figures by the end of the year. Truly, you don't. There's a lot of opportunities in crypto, even now, but you have to take like the slow, principled approach to find them has been my experience. I mean, you can also just ape into everything and hope that you end up lucky, and maybe you will, but that's just luck. So if you want to own your own destiny, kind of, you will probably need to be a little more deliberate, I would say. That's the main tip I have.
Yeah, I think those are wise words that everyone forgets in the society of instant gratification that we have now, where everyone's going 1,000 miles an hour.